line. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with my co-host.
Charlotte Littlefield. Good evening, George.
How you doing? Boy, in England, it's cold over there, isn't it? Boy, it's freezing, 10 degrees below zero, and my gosh, snowing everywhere. It's blizzard all over England.
Yeah, things are crazy all over, that's for sure.
But I guess we have global warming, right?
Yeah, it's just ice age coming upon us. Who knows?
Tonight we have just an extraordinarily fine guest that's coming up here in just a second. Let me tell you about him. Satyajit Das was a former trader who worked for Citigroup and Merrill Lynch, as well as a corporate treasurer. He's a global authority on and authority of several key reference books and works on derivatives and risk management. He's also the author of Traders, Guns, and Money, Knowns and Unknowns in the Dazzling World of Derivatives. It's a Financial Times Prentice Hall publication. Financial Times of London said this about the book: fascinating reading, explaining not only the high-minded theory behind the business and its various products, but the sometimes sordid reality of the industry. In the 2006 book, and subsequent, he's revised it in 2010, so it's up to date now. He published about the crisis, the money crisis, and he's made some predictions, and we're going to ask him in a few minutes about some of those predictions that have come true. But welcome to our program, Doss.
It's my pleasure to be with you, George and Charlotte.
Okay. You made some predictions, what, back in 2007, was it? Is that about approximately the date?
Well, you have to go back a bit in history. The book itself was written in the period 2003 to 2005. And when I started to write the book, I really didn't have in mind the global financial crisis that was going to occur in 2007. But as I started to put the book together, it became very clear to me that there was things going on in financial markets and in money matters and indeed in the global economy, which was not going to end well. Now, you have to be a little careful here. In the aftermath of the global financial crisis, it seems to me everybody, but I mean everybody, predicted the crisis. So I'm not going to say that I got everything right. What I did say was I think some of the elements of what I call mad money, which is things like derivatives, was creating a problem, which was going to be extraordinarily, extraordinarily important. And the most worrying thing for me was everybody seemed to be blithely unaware of it or ignoring it. And unfortunately, my worst predictions were that there was going to be a global credit crash, which did occur. And the most amusing thing about all of that is now that the same people who apparently predicted it but now are saying they'll be coming out of it, yet I see no signs that the crisis is A, over, and B, the key issues which caused it have changed.
Right. You said in one of your articles recently that they've created so much money and no one knows really the outcome of all that money, loose money, or mad money that's been created out there worldwide. Would that be a good assessment or accurate?
Look, I think that's probably a good place to start. I mean, everybody has this sort of strange sort of version of reality which says that this problem was caused in the last few years. It really wasn't. It's been going on since the early 1970s, which is that what has happened.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah, we're going to bring it back online. what he was saying, we're bringing him in, Satyajit Das. We'll have him back on here in a second. I think he was saying he was getting ready to talk about all the money that's been created, especially by the Fed. And that money has gone out and it's credit. It's not printed money as such in physical coinage and printed money. It's actually credits. And that credit has gone out and is on deposits throughout the world. And it's just, he calls it mad money, you know. And so it's one of those things that nobody knows the exact outcome of the Fed having created these billions and trillions of credits. You know what I'm talking about, Charlotte? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to be interviewing here, Dawson, in a second. We'll bring it back up. And he has some very, very interesting things to say. There have been tremendous trade imbalances, yeah, welcome back,
George, I'm sorry. I think it must have been Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve listening in. They decided, that was a danger to them.
Well, Doc, you know what's interesting is we've had a hard time getting into our website for about the last 3 hours from the web.
Really?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Well, I think we should put it down to a mutual conspiracy.
Yeah, I think it's the NSA, Federal Reserve. They're closing us down, huh, Doc?
That's right. I think that's right. I don't care who it is, but somebody. But coming back to where we were.
Yes,
I think
sir.
I was The whole thing is that this problem has been around for 30 or 40 years, and to go put it back into perspective, I think money changed. Money was originally just a means of exchange, a store of value, and then what happened was somehow money got out of control. And money got out of control in the sense that we basically started to see money as a way of making more money, which then became a way of making more money. And what actually then happened was we got these strange, extravagant forms of money, like derivatives, like securitization. And what that did was effectively create a strange kind of wealth. And I'll explain what I mean by that. If you actually look at a person's house is a form of shelter. It's where they live, where they work, all of those types of things. But suddenly, miraculously, what happens is there's a flood of money coming into the world, and you can use that money to go and buy houses, okay? But if everybody has a lot of money, what happens? The price of those houses goes up. And so what happens is if you own a house, you suddenly get this illusion that you're richer. So what then the bankers come along and do and say, well, why don't you borrow against that value of your house? The problem with all of that is that the borrowing is real in the sense that you have to pay it back, but the value of your house, if you like, was created by this flood of money which forced up the value of your house artificially. And in a nutshell, that happened not only in the U.S. housing market, that happened in housing markets in various parts of the world, but that occurred in almost every form of wealth and investment, like stocks, like in other types of assets like commodities and so forth. So we lived in a strange sort of hallucinatory world where what we were doing is basically borrowing more and more but pretending we were getting wealthier and wealthier. And what the bankers did was find new ways to create debt. Now, John Kenneth Galbraith, the economist, once noted that there's really not much innovation in finance. It's just debt, and we just call it different things and we make it up into different names and fancier names. But at the end of it all, it's the debt. And so we had this huge, huge debt-fueled society that came along. Now, the other thing you just mentioned, I noted global imbalances, and that's actually interesting, because people think of debt as a country-specific issue. But what also happened is that what we need to basically see is that the global market also became driven
George Washington said, "Government is not reason, it is not eloquence, it is force, like fire. It is a dangerous servant and a fearful master." America's government is no longer the servant of the people and the protector of our liberty, but has become that fearful master. We the people must understand the nature of this government gone awry if we are to be successful in saving our country. America is being deliberately destroyed by a cabal of international gangsters so that she can be forced into subjugation to a one-world government. The God-given, unalienable rights of the Declaration of Independence are in jeopardy. We must not let them be stolen by ambitious and evil men. Utopia Silver Supplements believes it is our God-given right to make our own health care decisions however we deem best. If we can help you with your supplement needs and better health, then help us win this health freedom battle. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's UTOPIASilver.com. Or call 888-213-4338. Again, 888-213-4338.
Hi, I'm here talking with Don Wiskin of HeartDrop.com. I understand that you changed the name of your product, Don.
Yes, we did. It's now Extendivite, meaning to extend your life.
Wow, extend your life. Everybody wants to extend their life. How's it made, Don?
Well, Extendivite is made from herbs gathered from many different parts of the world. We chose 7 of the heart and health-related herbs known to improve your health.
Your heart drops have always kept me from feeling sick or run down, Don. Will Extendivite continue to do the same thing for me?
Yes, it will. All we changed was the name. I'm here because at 42, I had a heart attack and the garlic cayenne drops gave me back my life.
We have been talking with Don Wiskin about his exciting new product called Extendivite. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit his website at heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Good day, Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources, December 17, 2010. Gold opened this morning at $1,372.30. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1,407.91, $703.95 for a half ounce, or $351.98 for the quarter ounce. That's $1,407.91, $703.95, or $351.98.
Again, the Congressional Budget Office sounds the alarm, warning of Greek-style U.S. debt crises. CBO is drawing a parallel between U.S. economy and the Greek economic meltdown. Debt to GDP climbing to unfamiliar territory and deficits rising to unsupportable levels. Hi, Ted Anderson. The Federal Debt and Risk of Financial Crises document the CBO has published is a must-read for every American. Covering the risks of deficit spending, aging population, and rising interest rates spells economic disaster. Call today at 800-686-2237. I'll send it free. Again, call 800-686-2237. Ask for the CBO document. Call 800-686-2237.
Where have all the military surplus stores gone? Don't worry, you don't need one. Because everything you need in military surplus is at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, Military.com. One of the last surviving true military surplus stores in the country. Go online now to MainMilitary.com and discover a source for hard-to-find surplus items at true surplus prices. Surplus gun cleaning kits as low as $2.99. Complete chemical suits as low as $11.99. See our huge selection of gas masks, filters, and accessories. Finish and M10 gas masks are 3 for $30, and Swiss filters are 3 for $12. Searching for Strike Anywhere matches? MainMilitary.com has them, plus a whole new product line of survival and first aid kits and lots more. Get free shipping on orders over $50 only at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, Military.com. Or call 877-608-0179, 877-608-0179. MainMilitary.com, the main name in military supply.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield, and welcome back to our special guest, Sadhjit Das. I hope I said that properly. Author of
Charlotte, everybody calls me Das. It's just easier all around because nobody can pronounce my first name. It was a bit of a tongue twister. But coming back to what we were saying, we were talking about the buildup of debt. The next thing is that, you know, as I was starting to say, country starts to do this, and this is famously known as the China-America imbalance. Now, what that meant was the Chinese have massive savings. And also, because they save around about probably between 30 and 50% of their income for a whole bunch of reasons. And then also the Chinese export more than they import.
Again, there is some controversy about why that occurs, but to some extent, leaving that to one side, what that did was give them a massive store of wealth, which is about $2.7 trillion today. Now, what happened in this world of debt is that money was actually lent overseas, and a lot of it went into the United States. So essentially what was happening was this strange sort of circular flow of money. The Chinese were exporting more. They were making more money. They had more savings, which are called foreign exchange reserves. They had domestic savings, which is the Chinese people's savings. They were then sending that to the United States. And the United States allowed this borrowing to basically keep its interest rates low, which basically allowed them to buy more Chinese goods, creating an even greater degree of this circulation of money. Now, in some ways, this is kind of a bizarre world, and it found its manifestation in a couple of really strange places, like Ireland and Iceland. In Iceland, for instance, the whole economy became driven by four or five large banks to the point where the total debt of the banking system was like 8.5 times the size of the Icelandic economy. And so the whole thing that we're talking about coming apart in, say, the period 2007 to today has its origins in debt. And the world just has too much debt, and we just won't face up to it. And that's really, in a nub, the problem we have. And what the policymakers have done over the last probably, I suppose, 3 years is spend a lot of time denying that it's a problem. And but we're seeing signs that it's becoming bigger and bigger problem with places like Greece, now Ireland, and what almost certainly will follow, which is Portugal, Spain, and perhaps Italy and Belgium, which will create huge stresses in the system. And ultimately, attention will come back to the U.S., which, of course, has the biggest government borrowings of any country in the world.
Right. Those PIG, those Eurozone countries, has one of the problems been that they've been overspending on their social programs and so forth, and that production is not kept up with that type of spending?
Well, I think if you look at Europe, I mean, Leo Tolstoy, the famous Russian novelist, once remarked that, you know, all happy families are alike and all unhappy families are unhappy in different ways. So I think basically if you look at the Eurozone countries, that holds true. And let's go through what we call the pigs. The pigs are basically, I actually am very fond of pigs. They're very useful creatures. But in the case of European pigs, they're very fairly toxic. And this is known as Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. And as you know, George, earlier in the year, Greece had huge problems. So let's start with Greece. What was the problem with Greece?
Well, I think and Italy is in there too, isn't it?
Yeah, sometimes we get pigs, which is misspelled with two I's, and that's when we get Italy.
Yeah. So Italy
that's
and
right.
Ireland, yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. And
right.
If you go to Greece, what happened was the Greek economy is a fairly small economy. It's a small country with a limited economic base. Now, what happened is when they became part of the European Union and ultimately became part of the euro single currency, they received massive inflows of money from the European Union. But that in itself was not the cause of the problem. When they joined the euro, their interest rates fell. And as their interest rates fell from, say, double digits, like 10 or 12%, down to 3 to 5%, it set off this amazing borrowing boom in Greece, which was construction, but the government itself could suddenly start to borrow huge amounts of money, and they spent a lot of money on social welfare. That was the first one that became a problem. Now, you look at, for instance, Spain, there are similarities, but in that case, it was a massive construction and housing and generally real estate boom fed by cheap interest rates. Ireland, however, was probably the most surreal place of all of them, because they had all of the features of Greece, Spain, and then some. Because believe it or not, Ireland became one of the financial centers of Europe. And in the Irish docks, they set up a special thing called the Irish International Financial Center, which has to be an oxymoron in some shape or form. And that became the center of activity, which is now obviously in the aftermath of the financial crisis collapsed, with huge consequences for Ireland. So each of those countries has differences, but this one unmistakable commonality to all of them, which is the countries have borrowed far too much. And there's a very famous Bruce Springsteen song that, you know, a man has debts that an honest man can't pay back. And these countries have just no way known to mankind that they're going to be able to pay this debt back. To give you some idea also of the ludicrousness of the response of the European Union, the European Union believes that more debt will solve the problem. So at the moment, as you know, they're lending Greece more money. Now, and they also have the IMF and the European Union in there trying to sort of correct the economy. But their best forecast is Greek debt will rise from 270 billion euros, which is about probably give or take around about $370 billion. It'll rise, even with the best plan in the world, to 340 billion euros, which is an increase of around about a quarter. And what I don't really understand is that they can't service and pay back 270 billion euros in debt. How the hell are they going to pay back 340 billion euros in debt in 5 years' time when the economy is going to be smaller and basically not have the productive capacity? So it's just a ludicrous proposition. But at the moment, our politicians and policymakers seem to be in a state of disbelief or cognitive dissonance and believe that this can work. It's quite eerie, actually.
Well, we're headed for just chaos. Do you see sometime in the future some kind of an international debt conference to try to write down some of this debt or write it off to get it manageable again or not?
Well, to some extent, I think, you know the old story, George, of, you know, a farmer standing by the side of the road and somebody pulls up in a car and says to him, you know, I want to go to X. How do I get there? And the farmer sort of chews on his tobacco and says to him, well, if you were to go to X, I wouldn't start here. And it's a bit like we've got that sort of problem. We've got all this debt. And we're all sort of saying, well, if we didn't have this debt, what would we do? Now, the reality is we've got to look at two things. Okay, one is what happened to the debt. There's nothing intrinsically wrong with borrowing money, because if you borrow money and use it productively, like build factories, build schools, which turns out people who can go out and be productive, nothing wrong with that. Except we use most of this money for consumption, and that's the big problem. So at some point in time, we are going to have to face up to the piper and write off some of this debt, which, as we can talk about, will be very damaging to the banking system of the world, which might set off the next crisis.
Okay, let's touch on that when we come back. Thank you for being with us. We'll be right back.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Do you want to get away from additives and preservatives in your food? Need alternatives to conventional food preparation? Do you want to save the fruits of your gardening labor? And are you looking for an excellent gift idea? Then check out the Excalibur Dehydrator. Dehydration is one of the healthiest, most cost-effective, and fun ways to feed yourself and your family. Make healthy snacks like fruit roll-ups and beef jerky. Store healthy food in case of an emergency with no added salts, fats, or preservatives. And save hundreds of dollars by drying it yourself with the Excalibur Dehydrator. The Excalibur Dehydrator comes with an industry-leading exclusive 10-year warranty. And when you order, you'll receive a free book filled with amazing, easy recipes, a $25 value free for a limited time. Limited limited time. Just mention coupon code GCN. Learn more and order your Excalibur Dehydrator today at drying123.com. That's drying123.com. Drying123.com. Or call 1-800-875-4254. That's 1-800-875-4254. Season's greetings and health and wellness from Excalibur Dehydrator.
Are you tired of police, judges, and bureaucrats using traffic tickets and other regulatory traps to trick you out of your hard-earned money? Are you sick of fraudulent bankers rigging mortgages and using the foreclosure process to steal your home? You need to visit bestfreedomtools.com. Act now to get an amazing free catalog and free DVD packed with vital information to give you the upper hand against these so-called authorities. You will learn how to overcome all traffic fines, how to stop judges in their tracks, and how to effectively combat penalty notices of all kinds without paying a penny. All the information you need to regain your health, wealth, and power is yours at bestfreedomtools.com. To get your free catalog and free DVD, call 800-880-9976. That's 800-880-9976. Or visit bestfreedomtools.com now for your free catalog and free DVD. Bestfreedomtools.com, giving you the information you need today.
On air, online, and on demand, we are the GZN Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with... Yeah, welcome. That's Jennifer. Yeah, okay. We got into the G20. We were talking about the banks and what effect that this financial... Actually, it's been more of a financial crisis than anything that I've been able to discern. And we talked to Bob Chapman over the years. Das is online with us. Welcome back, Das and Charlotte.
How are you, George?
Okay, yes. You said something about, yeah, is G20, yeah, welcome back, Charlotte. Yeah, G20, have they been scrambling and trying to get of the banking sector and trying to reorganize and restructure this? I went up to Toronto, and they were just they were madly trying to grasp for straws and trying to pull everything together. And what is your idea and view and comments on the G20 and how it factors into what we've been discussing?
Well, I think one of the key things is, I think it's quite amusing to hear all the world leaders get together and say how they're going to save the global economies when basically all they seem to be trying to do is save the banks and also the lenders who have lent really based on very, very poor judgment. And going back just a tad to what I was saying about Europe, you know, the Europeans have lined up a huge sum of money, over $1 trillion, to try to bail out some of these economies. And everybody goes, oh, isn't that kind? Well, the answer is, it's kind to whom? Because they're basically designed to bail out a bunch of banks, because the banks have lent, and indeed other investors have lent, the so-called pigs, over $2 trillion. And the German and French banks alone are owed close to $1 trillion by these countries. So fundamentally, when you come back to the G20, what the G20 has done from day one of the crisis is try to essentially bail out the banking system. And to be very brutally honest, there's two reasons for that. One, which I actually think is fairly sensible, because there was a moment in September, October 2008, particularly when Lehman Brothers failed and AIG, the large insurance company, came to the brink of failure, that there was a real fear that ordinary people like you and me, if we went to our ATMs and tried to take money out of banks, we wouldn't be able to. And banks are important as part of really, they're a lubricant of normal society, and that was a problem. The second is the policymakers around the world are now literally captured by bankers. And many, many years ago, a very, very eminent American economist called Manker Olson wrote a very, very Creasy in the book called The Logic of Collective Actions, and he said that what happens in democracies is over a period of time, coalitions build. These are lobby groups, and in the modern world, the finance industry has become a very, very large lobby group, and they're very well financed, they have a lot of money, they have a lot of lobbying power. So what they do is they basically take charge of the government, but the problem is there are other lobby groups as well, so eventually nothing happens and the whole thing stops. But in the crisis, what happened, because of the important role the banks play in modern life, they were able to use their lobbying power to say, look, save us, because if you don't save us, then basically, you know, the whole of society will stop. And the G20 has, since that time, sort of been trying to balance two things. One is the desire to save the banks. And also, to be very fair to the G20, there is an understanding that the banks' behavior was extraordinarily poor, and they want to control them. And they keep alternating between the two of them. There's a very famous episode involving President Obama, which occurred at the end of, really, 2009, when he was very angry, as I understand it, that the banks were going to pay their senior executives and staff large bonuses. So he said something to the effect that, look, so we've spent, you know, nearly $1 trillion supporting the banking system, and as a result of that, they've made money. And let me get that right. Now, they're going to pay themselves bonuses with our money. And so, to some extent, the G20 is trying to balance these two interests. And I have to say the record is not good, not good. And I think what is also happening is the fundamentals of the global economy are slipping, which means there is a lot of beggar thy neighbor at the G20, which has sort of changed from April 2009 when they were all so terrified. They were actually united in trying to do something. Now it's a case of, well, I can get by without you. So there's a huge series of very complex issues playing out, and none of us really know how that will actually play out over probably the next 2 to 3 years, George.
Right. The Fed at times has been very reluctant at providing information. They did provide some information about some of the key banks that they funded recently, and it looks like many of those are in the Inter Alpha Bank Group, along with Goldman Sachs and AIG. Was that their ultimate goal, to save those institutions with those credits?
Look, to some extent, I think that there is a level of, I suppose, reluctance on the Fed's part to release information because they believe it will be damaging to individual institutions and it will prevent the Fed from doing what's necessary. But I also think, at the same time, given that they're playing with public funds, it's not as if Ben Bernanke is writing a personal check or Timothy Geithner or Larry Summers is writing a personal check, that you're playing with government money. You have to have some level of accountability in that process. And I think Professor Elizabeth Warren of Harvard, who sits on top of the so-called TARP Oversight Committee, has been one of the very few people who has stood up and said, look, you know, this is just terribly unsatisfactory. But she gets howled down every time. And I think fundamentally what the Fed did at one level was essential to sort of stop the total collapse of the economic system. I mean, Bernanke is on record as having told Congress that if basically they didn't do something, by Monday they wouldn't have an economy. And I think while that may sound alarmist, I don't think I was too far from the truth. Now, subsequently, Go on. Sorry, George. Go on.
Yeah, Henry Paulson, actually, in 2008 in the fall, he intimidated congressional members and Congress and said that there'd be a total economic collapse and we might have martial law if they didn't pass that bailout bill.
Yeah,
that's
well,
what they,
I think
what
like
they
all
told
the
Congress. So, I mean, well, it I looks mean, like to me they used the economic hustle to get the bailout money to save the institutions. So it was a financial asset was imminent, not economic.
Well, I think to some extent, I think their fear was genuine. But then the next question is, okay, well, fine, the fear is genuine, and we're going to do something about it. But then what do they do? And I think that is where I think the more egregious complaints are, that what they did was basically not do the steps that were necessary to, A, support the system properly, and fundamentally, to actually hold the people who had made mistakes accountable. So what they did and what they've ended up doing is rewarding the surviving banks enormously through their efforts. I'll give you one very simple example of that. You know, they've kept interest rates down in the United States close to zero. Now, what most people don't understand that is that that actually is very damaging to the economy. The one reason it's damaging to the economy is for the people who are retirees or who live off their savings. Well, fundamentally, what that has done is basically given them zero income. And that's actually also helped the banks enormously because they can borrow at very, very low rates of funds. And then on the other hand, they can lend out the money. And basically, that subsidy is worth hundreds of billions of dollars. And nobody really talks about that subsidy. And that's kind of sad. And I think that's where some of those accountability issues that you're talking about are absolutely
right.
Crucial.
Yeah, Ron Paul is sitting on a chairmanship of a subcommittee. He's going to call Ben Bernanke in and ask him some hard questions, I guess. But we'll be right back. Thank you for being with us. Taking a small break again.
Thomas Jefferson once said, "When the people fear their government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty." Our God-given right to life and liberty, and the right to determine what is best for our lives and our families' health, are in jeopardy. If we the people do not diligently assert these rights, they may be taken away and lost forever. Utopia Silver is known for fighting for health freedom, and we will not meekly allow ourselves to be led as lambs to the slaughter, sitting passively by. And accepting the chains of slavery that are being placed on America is not an option. Please stand with Utopia Silver in this fight. Utopia Silver carries some of the most effective colloidal silver products on the market and numerous other high-quality health supplements. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's U-T-O-P-I-A, utopiasilver.com. Or call us today at 1-888-213-4338. 1-888-213-4338.
Is it really possible to get out of debt without payment plans or attorneys?
18 years ago, we developed a program that has made thousands debt-free in just 90 days. It's called Zero Debt in 90 Days, and it works for all credit card debt, medical bills, even collection lawsuits.
When I first joined, I was being sued, so I used the program methods. And after filing one piece of paper, the collection lawsuit was dismissed.
With Zero Debt in 90 Days, your success is guaranteed in writing. There is no other program of its kind. Don't be alone when creditors gang up on you. Let our team of experts provide the resources to fight back and stop creditors in only 90 days. Guaranteed. Prevent wage garnishments, bank levies, and stop collection calls with our proven program. Call Zero Debt in 90 Days now. 800-477-9256. And ask for free information from an expert who also completed our program. 800-477-9256 or ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. 800-477-9256 or ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com.
Forget everything you've been told about long-term food storage. When all hell breaks loose, you'll need the single most effective way to get high-powered Delta Force nutrients to your family fast. Like any Special Forces commando, you need a plan. You need a Black Hawk Down food plan. Introducing the Survival Sprout Bank from Solutions from Science. It's your countertop survival garden. Yes, grow fresh greens right on your countertop in just a few short days. Sprouts are the green shoots that emerge from newly germinated seeds, and they are powerhouses of living, easily absorbed nutrients. The Survival Sprout Bank is a complete kit with nothing else to buy. And with sprouts so easy to grow, even children can grow emergency food. Call 877-327-0365 or go to SurvivalSproutBank.com. That's 877-327-0365 or order online at SurvivalSproutBank.com. Survival Sprout Bank, your Black Hawk Down emergency food plan.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with Charlotte Littleton. Welcome back, Dash.
Nice to be with you.
Yeah, nice having you. We really appreciate you being with us, and we consider it an honor with your expertise in this area. is it sometimes the final deciding criteria that an old Jewish investment friend of mine in Chicago told me one time? He said, George, these guys may try to manipulate these markets with money or whatever, but in the end, the market will reassert itself. Is that what's going to happen eventually?
Look, I think it's kind of even simpler than that. It's called gravity, because I think the world has been trying to defy financial gravity. And you can keep pumping money into the economy as much as you like, but it's not going to work. In fact, I have a name for this economy. I call it the Botox economy. So, you know,
really?
You know, I don't know, George and Charlotte, I don't know whether you're aware of the effects of Botox. I personally never used it. I don't know whether you have. But basically, as I understand it, it makes you look young, but it doesn't really change anything. And it's got two problems. It's temporary, and it's got side effects. And what we're now starting to see is the effects of this Botox, which is just money. You're just pumping money and cheap money into the system. Essentially, these financial gains are not going to work. And let's boil it down to a really simple thing, which is a lot of people in the world, a lot of countries in the world have borrowed too much money, and they can't pay it back. And so what are they going to have to do? I mean, you and I both know in our personal lives, you know, $1 of income has to equal $1 of expenditure. When, you know, you have $1 of income and you're spending $1.50, you've got a problem. And we're going to have to live within our means. The real problem with that is the world has a very, very bad debt addiction. And that's what's driven the growth in the economy. And we now really have to go and revisit how the economy works. And we have to go really to what I call real engineering. We've got to make real things. We don't want to play around with financial things, which are nice, which are interesting, and sometimes they're very useful. But that's not the real economy. I mean, we have to develop new technologies. We have to grow food more efficiently. We have to do lots of things. And that's really what I call financial gravity. And what I think we're seeing at the moment is the world trying to defy financial gravity. Generally, I've found, I don't know about you guys, but if I try to stay, you know, levitate off the ground for very long, I'm brought down to ground with a thud pretty quickly. I think that's what's happening to the global economy, and it's going to be a slow process. It's not going to happen overnight. But we're in for an epic adjustment, because what's happened in the last 3 years is basically a massive change, and like all changes like that, people really are struggling at the moment to come to terms with it. And to some extent, I have some sympathy for the policymakers as well, because they want the world to go back to what it was, because it was so comfortable and easy. But it's not going to be that comfortable and easy going forward.
Right. So you're talking about really a real productive economy, one that's creating tangible goods and services instead of all these financial things that have been built on top of each other. And that's where these derivatives have gotten really so exotic that it's just unbelievably getting crazy, is it not?
Well, it is. I mean, let's go back a stage to derivatives. Derivatives themselves are not terribly fancy. I mean, the people in the industry like to make them complicated, but they're very simple. It's a system of price guarantees and price insurance. I mean, in Texas, you have farmers. I mean, if you're a wheat farmer and you don't know the price you're going to get from your wheat when you actually take it to market, it's prudent to go and try to get some insurance against the price going down or guarantee the price for the wheat, which is perfectly sensible. And that was what derivatives originally were. Now, today, the derivative market globally is $580 trillion. Now, for those of us who struggle with trillions, that is 12 zeros after the 580. And the most important comparison is that's like 10 times all the goods that are produced in the world in a year. In fact, the outstanding of derivatives today is equal to the production of the global economy for the last 20, 25 years. That's a staggering number. Now, the question is, how much of that is actually got to do with our farmers and our real industrialists managing risks? And the answer is precious little. And so we've got into this lovely psychology of basically what I call the speculation economy, where everybody basically speculates and makes money. But the problem is, that's not really what the economy or anything is about. And I think we've forgotten that. And like all things in life, people aren't stupid. They'll learn that lesson. But it's going to be a slow, very painful lesson to learn. And that's I think, where the world is at the moment.
Right. You, the derivative market, prognosticator said that the banks had turned casinos when, you know, when the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed, you know, and where it allowed the banks to start getting into Wall Street securities and so forth. That seems to me was a major blunder and error. How about, what would you say?
Well, I think Glass-Steagall was actually put in place after the 1929 stock market crash and the abuses. And Glass-Steagall has an important role. What it did was separate out depositors' money from basically speculation. I mean, Glass-Steagall was created specifically to avoid a problem which occurred in the 1920s when certain banks took their depositors' money and went to the casino with it, to put it quite simply. Now, what Glass-Steagall said, well, you can't do that. Now, and you're quite correct, in the 1990s, the administration, which was actually it was various administrations, really starting with the Reagan, then the Bush, and then the Clinton administration, progressively weakened Glass-Steagall to the point where it was finally removed. And that certainly allowed banks to take far greater risks with depositors' money. And I think, to some extent, I think we have a opportunity, which I don't think will be taken, to revisit the role of banking. And I, for one, believe that, you know, there are two types of banking. The first is what some of your listeners would remember is Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life, where you take deposits, lend money to people for businesses, for houses, to grow their lives and create prosperity. And that's quite a safe, simple business. And we need to separate that from another business, which is this sort of steroid-fueled high-tech banking. And I think they're two separate things. Now, there's a second subsidiary question you have to answer is, do we want that high-tech steroid-fueled economy of debt and speculation? That's a separate issue. We need to separate out core banks from that. And I think that was the historic opportunity for the Congress and the administration to try to confront, which obviously has come out now in the form of the Frank Dodd bill, which I jokingly refer to as frankly a dud, because it doesn't do any of that. It doesn't do any of that. And the most egregious failing of that bill is it actually is like a missive from Congress to the regulators. By the way, these are the same regulators who couldn't see anything coming, who missed all the problems. They're now going to make all the rules governing these industries.
Boy, it gave them a tremendous amount of power, didn't it? It's just the wrong thing to do, huh?
I think that's right. I think why would you give them, people whose records in this area are largely deficient, the opportunity behind closed doors in the company of lobbyists to make rules? It's just sort of, you know, kind of crazy. The German finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, who's a very direct-speaking individual, once summed this up very well. He said, if you're going to drain a swamp, you don't ask the frogs for their opinion. And that's pretty much what we are now doing, is we're asking the frogs to tell us whether or not the swamp should be drained, which doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense to me. And the lobbying process that's going on is just extraordinary. I jokingly call the Frank Dodd bill "No Banking Lobbyists Left Behind," because you remember John McCain used those words to describe the energy bill some years ago. And I just think what we're going to get out of that is a very complex set of rules which will not actually achieve the much, you know, touted objectives of financial reform, which I think is sorely, sorely necessary.
It looks like the standards are being raised so high that only the large banks will survive, and this is to push out the lower capitalized banks that can't meet those new rules. What do you think?
Well, I think one of the interesting issues is, and you were talking about the G20, the G20 have come up with basically these standards for banking. And one of the side effects of that is, frankly, as you say, greater concentration among the big banks. And one of the interesting things is, if you look at the unemployment in the States, it's got to come down through small business, and the smaller banks you mentioned are key funders of those small businesses, and if they're disadvantaged, that can't be a positive thing.
We've got to take care of the small banks. Can you come back for another segment after the hour?
Yes, I can. I'll stay with you if you like.
Okay, we've got to leave the air right now, but we'll be back at about 9 after. But we certainly appreciate your insight here. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.